Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast, the Crosstown Shootout, one day away, that joined by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
I'm doing pretty well, Scott. It's been, you know, pretty much a lot of fun on, if you're a UC Hoops or football fan. We'll cover both today. We're gonna flip it up today. We're going to merge both together because, I mean, quite frankly, there's not a whole lot to talk about on the football side, and we just want to kind of focus on hoops and... Yeah, jumping right into the football side, really brief, because we're going to cover it later on. UC's playing Virginia Tech in the Military Bowl for what feels like the 77th time in the last 77 years. Scott, what are your initial thoughts on this?
When there was, like, the previews that had, like, UC playing Miami, I thought that one was a little bit more exciting. Like, ending up with Virginia Tech, who, like, just got bowl eligible last weekend, and the game they played in like 2014. That's a fine game, I guess. I don't know. It's not like the sexiest bowl game there is, but like a New Year's Eve bowl is like probably the best wish. And like out of all the other conference bowl opponents, which we'll touch on in a minute, I think they got the the best one. What about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, you see Virginia Tech pop up on the schedule, and you're like, oh, is this a conference game? Are we playing Virginia Tech again? I mean, they played Virginia Tech in the Military Bowl in 2014. They played them in non-conference games, in 2012. They've been to Annapolis. They were there last year. They'll be there next year. I mean, they've got a lot of familiarity with the region. But, you know, to your point, some of the other P5 options, first of all, this is having a P5 opponent drastically trumps having a G5 opponent. Like, I mean, you could be Tulane and you're playing Louisiana in the AutoNation Cure Bowl on Saturday afternoon, next Saturday. You know, you have a P5 opponent, you go for it. But you're right. I mean, it feels like they played Virginia Tech a lot recently. And, you know, the other option out there was Miami. That would have definitely been a really good, appealing opponent to the eyes. At least they didn't get Georgia Tech, who doesn't have a coach. Well, up until 2 hours ago, they didn't have a coach. And that would have been a complete barn burner in UC's favor. UC is favored in this game by about a touchdown, I believe. They should win this game because, to your point, Virginia Tech limped into the bowl season. They're 6-6, but, you know, hey, at least they're bowling. At least they're playing a P5 opponent, right?
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing. Like, just getting a solid bowl spot. Like, New Year's Eve is, like, one of the prime bowl spots. It's like, and it's much better than playing, like next weekend or... like the middle of the week.
Right.
Like, as you mentioned, the spread opened 6.5. It went down to 5. Yeah, as it is.
Really? Right now. That's surprising. And that's very surprising.
Well, 6.5 just seemed high for, yeah, I guess. I don't know. The Virginia Tech, it really hasn't been that great this season.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like they limped into the bowl game. I mean, they beat their biggest win of the season was. I'm just looking at their schedule. Like at the end of the day, maybe it was Duke. I mean, like you could say Florida State at the beginning of the season where they beat them 24-3, but Florida State is god awful. Like they didn't even make a bowl game this year, right? Yeah, they're 5-7. They didn't make a bowl game. Their biggest win on the schedule was. Probably Duke or arguably Virginia. Finished 7-5. Yeah, I mean they had a really lackluster season under Justin Fuente. So like when it opened as a touchdown, I was like, oh yeah, that sounds about right. Like UC has a head of steam going into the bowl season. They've got a monster defense, and they're facing a pretty mediocre Virginia Tech team. You know, so I'm a little surprised to see the line drop a little bit.
I mean, Really, you could argue that Virginia Tech's, like, best win was, like, last week against Marshall.
Who could.
Yeah, like, Marshall had a fine season. They went 8-4. Like, they have Marshall has, like, a bit of, like, a similar profile to UC, in a way. Like, Cincinnati's a little bit better offensively, but Marshall's defense rated pretty highly in the S&P. And, like, Virginia Tech beat them by 21 points. So, like, I don't know. I guess I could see it from that sense, but I don't know. Probably just the Power 5 team getting, like, a touchdown, like, would make some people throw money down their way.
Yeah, and what you're getting is, like, the location bias, too, a little bit, right? Because they're in Annapolis, which is something like, what, 2 or 3 hours from Blacksburg. There's probably a ton of Virginia Tech fans in and around that region. So it could be the almost like the pseudo home 3 points that Vegas is throwing their way and moving that line, which I can definitely see. I mean, it sounds like tickets are flying off the shelf. There should be a decent UC crowd there. There usually is at bowl games. But, yeah, it's probably going to be a heavy Virginia Tech crowd like it was in 2014.
It'd almost be surprising if there wasn't, just because, like, as you mentioned, it's like a nice distance for them.
Yeah. I mean, not to, like, dive into the game itself. Going into this, I have a lot of confidence that UC wins this game. I mean, Virginia Tech, they're 69th in S&P Plus overall, 48th in offense, 79th in defense. They're just like a mediocre team. Like, they're 6th in the AAC in total offense, 8th in scoring, 11th in total defense, 10th in scoring defense, 9th in sacks, 7th in sacks allowed. Like, you go up and down their like, stat sheet, they're just mediocre. Whereas you look at UC, they're like an average offensive team, a little bit below average depending on who they're playing and what Mike Denbrock is going to come up with any given week. But they're a top-tier defense, and I feel like that's going to swing this game. And it is why I don't feel worried about facing Virginia Tech. And watch those words bite me. But yeah,
like, that's the kicker. Is like, it's really hard to get excited for a game against a team that just went like 6-6 and had to barely qualify. But it's like a solid program all around. Like, they always make bowl games. So, like, it'll be a good test to end the season.
Yeah, and that's the thing is you know, what it's like with Virginia Tech, they had, like, with this game, they set the record on a longest bowl appearance streak at, like, 26 straight. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a name opponent. It's gonna, if they win, it's gonna put a stamp on a very good season and put some momentum going into next year. Yeah, I mean, overall, it's really this opponent speaks to kind of the issues this conference has. And kind of bleeding into our next segment, just overall bowl bids. They got their name opponent out. I mean, let's not include UCF because that Access Bowl is an outlier. But they're facing three basically 500 ACC teams, an overachieving Army team, an 8-4 Marshall team, and a 7-6 Louisiana team. And this coming from a conference that, or this coming from teams that on the whole went something like 48-25. Like, you've got to have better bowl opponents if your teams are winning, you know, 9, 8, 9, 10 games. Like, it's not acceptable. And it's not, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily Oresko's fault. I mean, he pretty much had his feet to the fire when he agreed to all of this stuff when the conference was formed, but they've got to do better going forward. You know, with their bowl bids.
Wait, just imagine what the bowl slate would have been like if Memphis held on and beat Central Florida.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, yeah. Worse, like, way worse.
Then Central Florida ends up in, like, the top game, and then you're just filling out spots with some of these other teams. But, yeah, like, that's the big problem with, like, the conference is, like, you're just kind of stuck at, like, ESPN's mercy for whatever bowl games they want to make for you. And some of the other teams are just filling spots that conferences didn't have. It's like you end up with your good teams playing unimpressive teams. Like Memphis ends up against Wake Forest. Temple ends up against Duke, which is an interesting game. Like Houston against Army. Like nothing really too attractive. South Florida against Marshall in Tampa.
Yeah, I mean,
which has to be the worst bowl game for them to go to, unless they really want their season to end. Then they can be off. We don't have to go anywhere.
Now they don't have an offensive coordinator now, so who knows? Marshall's favored in that game by 1.5, the over-under is somehow 55 points, which has got to be high at this point.
Yeah, that over-under looks pretty high.
Yeah.
That is kind of crazy. Like, that's how bad a season South Florida's had. It's like they're at home. Like, actually at home, and like they're an underdog to Marshall.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit of an issue. They've got problems down there. It broadly speaking, I mean, let's see. Cincinnati plays Virginia Tech. I would put Cincinnati in favor of that game. Temple at Duke. Before Jeff Collins took that Georgia Tech job this morning, I would say Temple was probably favored. But now it's got to swing in Dave Cutcliffe's favor. Like it just has to. I mean, I don't know. Do you want to do quick bowl picks?
Yeah, we can throw our picks out there.
Okay. Yeah, we can. Yeah, I mean, next Saturday is when it actually kicks off, at least for the AAC, with Tulane, Louisiana Tech, losing to Lafayette. Well, yeah, let's just do it now. All right, so Tulane, Louisiana, Lafayette.
I'll go with Tulane. Like, they're an early favorite. And I have known nothing about Louisiana, so... that really informs my opinion on them. So I'll go
knowledge bias. Go for it.
I'll go conference. I'll call it conference pride.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Tulane is favored by a field goal. Tulane. I mean Willie Fritz. He got rid of his offensive coordinator. Hired I think an assistant from Memphis. I want to say. And maybe, I don't know, the coaching carousel has been really weird this year. I think that probably sounds about right. Like, I'd go with Tulane just out of comfort, I guess. Marshall, South Florida, you're probably picking Marshall, right?
Yeah, I don't know how you can not pick Marshall to beat South Florida. Just with how South Florida's finished the season, it'd be really hard to... be confident that they would win. But I guess the one advantage they would have is they are at home. And who really knows how much anybody cares about that game? It's they should have the home field advantage. For real home field advantage. Unless nobody shows up and Marshall shows out.
Yeah, they use it. USF is what? 1, 2, 3, 4. They're 4-2 at home this season. So, I mean, a lot of that 4 was very close games, and they had the luxury of playing ECU, UConn, and Elon in 3 of those 4 games. But that's a stat. I still think Marshall's going to win this one, but yeah, it could be a little bit of home field advantage there.
And that's really all you need for a bowl game is just a little bit. Although their stadium is going to be overrun by Marshall fans, so that's probably going to be sad for them.
That's true. Well, let's hope that the whole home field advantage thing doesn't work out favoring the Military Bowl. Memphis, Wake Forest.
I think this is one of the more interesting bowl games because we've seen. The good and bad from, both of these teams, really. Memphis has mostly good losses, and Wake Forest seems like they could play with, anybody in the ACC. But then, they have some, weird games. They got blown out by Pitt and Syracuse. like they like beat the hell out of Duke and like won at NC State. So I guess it would be whoever's offense is actually working. But and like Memphis's offense always works, so I'll go with Memphis.
Yeah, Wake Forest is, I mean, the over-under at 74.5, that is, like, spot on, because both of these teams have pretty, Memphis has an outstanding offense. I mean, Daryl Henderson, why the hell that guy isn't in the Heisman conversation, I have no idea. I mean, 1,909 yards rushing and 22 touchdowns on 214 carries, like, boy, I would hate to be facing that guy next season. If he even, I don't know, if he comes back to Memphis, who knows if he's going to declare or not, but... Yeah, it's going to be a very offensive-y game. Wake Forest has a pretty good running game. They score a lot of points, 32.5 per game. Yeah, this should be a very fun game. I agree. I think Memphis winds up winning this one. It should be fairly packed with Memphis fans. I mean, it's at UAB State. It's at Legion Field, which is, five hours down the road, something like that. Wake Forest is coming from, like... the East Coast, so there's a little bit of home field advantage there. Yeah, I think Memphis.
Yeah, Memphis 5-point favorite. That seems fair. Like both teams, yeah. Big offenses and shaky defenses. The ability to put up a ton of points is right there. It's got to happen. Yeah. This should be a pretty fun bowl game to have on in the background, at least at the very least. A background bowl game.
Yeah, it's like a nooner. I mean, it's a nooner on December 22nd. Probably a lot of people are going to be home starting their holiday stuff. I mean, I know I'll be... That'll be the day that we're going to be doing holiday stuff here in Cincinnati, so I'll probably have that on in the background while my parents are playing with my kid. Great parenting. Yeah, it should be a good one. And then, you know, right after that, you can... Keep on with ESPN's flagship network and watch Houston and Army, and which actually probably could be a pretty intriguing game. Like I don't think it'll be as fun as Memphis Wake Forest, but it's still intriguing. With Houston facing a 9-2 Army team, an overachieving 9-2 Army team, but a 9-2 Army team at that. What do you think?
I think intriguing is the right word for this one, because it's really hard to know where Houston's head is going to be. It's like they kind of work everywhere at the end of the season. We know Ed Oliver's skipping the bowl game. Like they have plenty of time. They have plenty of time to pull out all the tricks offensively. Like you know what Army's going to do. They're going to run the option and throw deep passes on you. It's like if the game's in Fort Worth and Houston's an underdog, which I think is kind of interesting. So ESPN's stats, like they heavily favor Houston in that one. So that'd be one to watch. Maybe like throw Houston like on your upset list for your bowl confidence pool. I'll go with Houston.
Yeah, like Houston's so wonky this year. I mean, one of the factors that might play into it, Major Applewhite probably has his hand all over that offense, but it sounds like Kendall Briles, their offensive coordinator. I think it's their offensive coordinator. Let's look that up. Kendall Briles.
Yeah, he is their offensive coordinator.
Okay. Yeah, he's supposed to be interviewing for Tennessee's offensive coordinator gig. So, I mean, that game is on December 22nd, like we said. So that's 2 weeks from now, roughly. You know, if he leaves, that could throw a wrinkle in it. The fact that, yeah, to your point, Ed Oliver's not playing in that game, and Army is a very runsy team because they're a service academy and that's just what they do. I mean, that being said, Houston put up 49 points on Navy and won that game 49-36. And Army and Navy, for all intents and purposes, run fairly similar systems. That being, and they also beat a Tulane team 48-17. Yeah, I mean, I would put money on Houston to upset that. Like, if you're gonna rank, like if you're ranking this game in terms of like confidence, you maybe squeak out a few extra points by picking Houston and having them higher on your list, even though a lot of people might go, you know, chalk in this game. So I think that's a good point.
And if you get a couple more points for picking underdogs, depending on how your pool works. I think that one would be an okay one. Unless Kendall Bryles, he's also a candidate for Florida State. Even though he just signed an extension, a week ago. Okay, so it was not a...
That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it was not a very tight extension. Temple plays Duke in another interesting game. Right now, Temple's the favorite. But as you mentioned a couple minutes ago, their coach left for Georgia Tech. So who really knows in that one? I would say Temple, but now I'm going to pick Duke.
Yeah, that's exactly. Heading into this game, I would have 1,000% picked Jeff Collins to win this game. Just the trajectory that Temple was going with at the end of the season. They won 6 of the last 7 games. Their only loss was a very close game to Central Florida. Central Florida's probably closest game of the season. And they were facing a Duke team that, like Virginia Tech, was fairly lucky to make a bowl game as it was. They lost 4 of their last 6 games. They only beat Miami and UNC by basically a touchdown. Now I have to go with Duke. I have to go with the consistency of David Cutcliffe at Duke. I don't know what Jeff Collins is going to do in terms of coaching this bowl game. Is he gonna just go straight to Georgia Tech, this afternoon? Is he gonna pull a Scott Frost and coach the team? If he does go, is he gonna leave all of his staff there to coach the team in the bowl game? Kind of like what Steve Stripling did back when Butch Jones took the Tennessee job. I mean, there's so many other factors going on there right now, but for me, I'd have to pick Duke.
It could, with the coach leaving, Collins, taking off, it's really hard to, think that, how much of his staff is actually going to say, you said. Because it gets his prime recruiting time. So you'd think they'd have to just jump right in and go right after Georgia Tech recruits.
That's a good point. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Because, with the new National Signing Day rules, you have a signing day here in
it's 2 weeks or next week.
Yeah, it's next week, isn't it? Why can't I find this?
I believe it is next week.
Okay, we'll go with next week sometime. So yeah, to your point, they have essentially a week to. I mean, they'll have the second. They'll have the second opportunity in February, but. If you're trying to secure recruits and, maybe he wants to bring some recruits with him from Temple, you got to get all that stuff going right quick. Your clock has started an hour ago.
Yeah, 100%. And it just throws Temple into such a weird situation because, you have basically 3 weeks to pull all of this together. And Duke really faded down the stretch. They lost to Clemson and Wake Forest 35-6 and 59-7. So they didn't exactly end on a high note. But they're a solidly coached team. They have a good quarterback. It should be maybe an interesting game.
Yeah, and just to kind of put clarity there, they didn't lose 59-7 to Clemson. That was not the 59-7 loss.
Yeah, they got hammered by Wake Forest pretty bad on that one.
That's the thing. If Temple had their head coach and all that solidarity, I would put them to win by 2 touchdowns. But now it's a coin flip at best.
And with the staff in turmoil. You can't imagine Collins would actually stay there until the bowl game. At least, I wouldn't think so.
I don't know. I mean, with Scott Frost, that situation was so unique because he resurrected UCF from the brink of destruction. And he put a lot of himself into that program. That was his baby for a while. With Jeff Collins, he's an Atlanta native. He used to work, I think he used to work at Georgia Tech specifically. He doesn't have as many ties to, I mean, he did a lot with the Temple program. He gave them a damn passing game, for God's sakes. Like, I mean, who would have thought that was going to happen? But, you know, I got to think his heart is at Georgia Tech, and he'd want to kind of get that thing going, you know, sooner rather than later. But you never know.
Yeah, you think he'd be ready to run into Georgia Tech. That's a really interesting situation, like what he decides to do offensively. Even defensively, like they weren't really good defensively this season. As you mentioned, like a Georgia native, he was a grad assistant at Georgia Tech. Yeah, so, like, good for him. And then the league loses another good coach.
And it really is. It really is. I mean, not to cut you off, but like, if he had stayed at Temple, I would not be shocked if Temple was right there with UC and UCF next season for the AAC East crown. I wouldn't be surprised if they even won it.
Yeah, and now you're in a situation where like they have to try to hit another home run, like with their coaching search, and like just by their history, like they've done a really solid job like the last, I would say, like decade. They've had two really good coaches.
Yeah, and Matt isn't on the podcast today. Let's see if he's going to join. I'm going to check our email to see if he had an update, and nothing. But he did tweet something out yesterday that's actually pretty interesting. Does Temple, with their next staff, do they lean into what Jeff Collins did, getting away from the run first, play very good defense, you know, kind of tandem, and lean into the passing game with the playmakers, with the talent on the outside, with the tall quarterback with the big arm? Or do they go back onto the laurels and hire kind of that Adazio kind of mentality? I don't know. That's going to be very interesting for Temple going forward, because they could go either way and probably be pretty successful. But if you establish what you're doing with what you did with Jeff Collins going forward, you could do a lot of new interesting things at a program that really hasn't had it going forward. Or you can kind of go back and assume you're going to win about 8 games every year and just play that ground and pound tough football. So it's really interesting what they might do going forward with the next staff.
It really is, because it's an interesting job, because for a long time it was like, yeah, like in garbage. And like, that really turned around. That really turned around, like after they got kicked out of the Big East, like when they went to the MAC for a while. And like, to end up back in the AAC, like in, not just like in the league, like they've been a really competitive team in this league. Like, even, like, won the conference or won the East Division a couple years ago. So, I think it's a pretty good job. But you just have to find somebody who's, like, willing to go all out recruiting.
Right. So, it'll be interesting. I mean, at this point, unless they go out and find, I don't know, like, to go on the very far end of the spectrum, like a Lincoln Riley-type replacement, they're probably not going to compete for the AAC East crown next year, and it's going to come down to UC in Central Florida. So, but we'll see. Do you have anything else to talk about on the football side? Do we want to talk about LSU UCF?
Yeah, we should give it a mention real quick. Okay. The LSU 7.5-point favorite. What stands out to you about this one? Do you think it's going to be like LSU just beats them down, or do you think it's going to be like a situation like last year where Central Florida pulls out like every single stop and pulls off a big win?
Ugh. I want to say UCF can win, but I mean, they don't have Mackenzie Milton, and you know, they needed a minor miracle to beat Memphis last week. I don't think LSU beats them down. I don't think it's like, you know, over at halftime. I think I think UCF has more than enough athletes to hang with LSU, but without Mackenzie Milton there, I don't know how they can climb out of that hole and win like they beat Auburn last year, you know, going punch for punch. I think they lose by like a touchdown and a half.
Yeah, that seems about fair. Like, it's like kind of hard to get a read on what they're gonna do, it's because like who knows how LSU will be like ready to play in that one. Like, not to use that as an excuse, but like if Central Florida can jump on them early, like they have a pretty good chance to pull off the upset. But if they like fall behind like they did against Memphis, like, yeah, they're not going to come back against a defense that good.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, it's great that they're playing in the game. I'm going to root for them, but I don't see how they win this game.
I don't either. So it seems like on the whole, we think the AAC is going to have an all right bowl season, maybe go 500. Or around 500.
Yeah, I mean, just going through it, I'll take Tulane, Memphis, Houston, UC to win, and then UCF, Temple, South Florida to lose. So, yeah, like 4-3.
And I don't think that would be that bad for the league, as long as they avoid going, like, 2-5 or somehow worse. I think it would be a nice statement. And really, it really all depends on what UCF does with how good the league looks.
Yeah.
See, if they get blown out, it makes the league look bad.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a good point, because the AAC can go 6-0 in all of their bowl games and get blown out by LSU in the Fiesta Bowl, and it'll look horrible for the league. That unfortunately, that is the, you know, perception is reality sometimes, and yeah, the conference getting blown out in a major opportunity like that, even though there's the giant asterisk sticking on UCF going into that game because Milton isn't playing, it will mean a lot if they win or lose either way.
Yeah, definitely, just because that's the big shiny bowl game. And nobody really is going to care about some of the other games. Like, I don't think Tulsa, or not Tulsa, but Tulane and Louisiana is going to get everybody buzzing. The one bowl game that's not on ESPN. Poor Tulane.
I mean, you know, the advantage there is if no one actually watches the game and the AAC loses, was it actually played? That's one thing to keep an eye out for.
Yes, that is a good philosophical question. So something to ponder on until we go further down the bowl games.
Yeah, exactly.
But now let's switch gears to basketball. Since crosstown shootouts just a day away, Cincinnati's won every single game since they opened the season with a loss at home against Ohio State. The last two games, a tight win against UNLV where UC just refused to put them away. And then a relatively easy win against Northern Kentucky, which surprised the coaches at least. Right, the Bearcats got on a huge first half run to go up, 20, and never looked back. A solid pair of wins against a couple of teams that probably won't do, like, I guess NKU could win their league, but UNLV is, like, okay. But just a couple solid performances to get ready for this one. And the team looks like they've been playing pretty well, at least. Winning is better than losing.
Yeah, and there's not a whole lot to take away from the UNLV game. I mean, UC was in control of that game most of the way. It got a little close at the end, and UC ended up winning a close game on the road, which, you know, whatever. I don't know what else to say about that game other than that, you know, you basically added a probably top 150, top 200, maybe top 100 kind of win, depending on how UNLV finishes out the year. They're not very good at all. I mean, they were like 118th or something coming into that game. I don't even know where they're at now. I'll look it up real quick. Come on, KenPom, UNLV. They are 139. So, you know, you get yourself a good, like, middle-class win there. And then NKU was a real statement win. I mean, this is a team that won the Horizon League, either the regular season or the conference title, each of the last 2 years. They were 8-1. They had a starter on the team, what's his name? Drew McDonald, who was averaging 18 points per game. He only had 8 and 7 rebounds. To your point, they jumped out to a giant lead in the first half. They never really let their foot off the throat most of the game. Trey Scott had 22 and 10. All of the starters had double digits. Just a big, like, that was the big single biggest win of the season in my mind. I mean, NKU could probably be like a top 50 win when it's all said and done if they win the Horizon League, depending on what the hell Wright State does. Really, really big statement win, especially building a lot of momentum going into the Crosstown Shootout.
And it was nice to see them put together a really solid performance like that against, like, another team who's decent. Like, they did it against Ole Miss back, Thanksgiving week. And to see them do it again, like, right before the Shootout was pretty impressive. Although, to go back to the UNLV game, I did think that game was interesting just to see how they played with Cumberland really doing nothing when he was in foul trouble. And Kane Broome stepped up a ton in that game. And then, as you mentioned, against Northern Kentucky, every starter in double digits. Like, Trey Scott, just a really fantastic game. Gets to the free throw line 13 times. Hits 12 of them. NKU as a team shot 15 free throws. Like, so, like, he had as many free throws as the other team. Like, that was really where UC won the game, 26 to 33 at the free throw line.
Yep.
And NKU went 6 to 15, which is, like, really bad. But, like, a really, really solid performance. And, like, the type of performance that gets you thinking, like, this team is still on the right track. And, like, they have some guys playing pretty well. And, like, the offense has been pretty solid.
Yeah, the offense has come on really, really nicely, and I mean it's got to be the power forwards. Like Brooks had 10 points on Tuesday. Trey Scott, you mentioned, had 22 points. He almost shot 63% from the field. He's really developed that mid range jumper that we saw from Kyle Washington last year. At least recently, he's still a little inconsistent, which is a little concerning because, you know, here's his point total the last 8 games: 15, then 4, 14, then 9, 11, then 4, and then 22. So with that pattern, he's destined to score less than double digits on Saturday, but hopefully he breaks that. But, I mean, whenever UC has him, whenever he gets going, UC is typically pretty comfortably in the driver's seat, which, you know, if we look back after the Ohio State game, you know, they were garbage in that game, and we kind of talked a little bit about it, why Mick doesn't go for 4-1 instead of going for the 3-2 that he's comfortable with. But if those two down below are going to score double digits, I'm perfectly comfortable with them, you know, playing, you know, starting together and playing together most of those games. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll see what they do going forward. But at least, you know, there's signs that the offense is really developing and coming along, like we at least saw last year.
That's one of the things we harped. Like, of course, we harped on after the Ohio State game. When you throw out a performance that bad, yeah, it does, like, make you have to, like, watch extra close. And, like, they've been performing really well since that. As you mentioned, the big guy's been pretty solid. Like, Nysir Brooks, like, his rebounding has me a bit concerned since he doesn't really do that lately.
He doesn't, yes. And the rebounding in that, he does not do it at all.
And
go ahead.
He really lost a lot of time to Sosa May, who, like, rebounded really well in the NKU game. Like, that's really, I think, what the Shootout's going to come down to. to turn an eye that way. It's like how those bigs perform. Because if they can step up and bring some, like bring their offense, bring their defense, as you mentioned, like really lock down Drew McDonald, who was a really good player. Like that's the type of thing you have to do against a team who's like as good offensively as Xavier. Is you really have to like play hard on both ends, and you can't really take any zeros offensively.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like Xavier, I mean, even though Chris Mack left and they had a lot of turnover, like UC had, they're pretty much right in line with a Xavier type team. They're 55th in KenPom, 21st in adjusted offense, 103rd in adjusted defense. They're 66th in points per game, averaging almost 80. They're shooting a little bit worse from three than we're probably used to. They're only shooting like 34% from three when they usually get that a little closer to 40. And, you know, throw that stat out the window because they're going to shoot like 50% in this game, probably. But, yeah, like to your point, you can't have black holes offensively. And, you know, Cumberland can't have 12 points in this game. He's got to have close to 20. I mean, that's just a fact. Like, you've got to lean on Club Cumberland, and he can't go, you know, 4 of 9 from the field and you know, not really take that many shots. He's got to get his volume up there.
Yeah, and he's taken a back seat in the offense the last few games. Like, of course, against Pine Bluff, he didn't really play that much. But against UNLV, only 3 points. Only 12 against Northern Kentucky. It's been interesting to see him try to get his game going when he's such a big focal point for the other teams. And that's let Trey Scott and Keith Williams have solid games. I've been really impressed with Keith Williams.
Absolutely.
Because he's got the pieces, and now he's starting to figure out how to put the pieces together. Like, he's not all the way there yet, because his game needs some refinement, since his shooting numbers aren't really great.
Mm-hmm.
But he's getting there, and I think that's really encouraging, is that you can see him getting better almost every single game, and he's not afraid to try to dunk on somebody's head. And his shooting is, he's just a lot more confident. Like, he's already made more threes this season than he did last season.
Yeah, he's definitely, if there's any kind of nitpicking in his game, it's that, the three-point shooting is a little lackluster. The free throw shooting is a little lackluster. But he's definitely got the confidence. Like, to your point, I mean, he had a couple of really, really, really good posterizing dunks against NKU and UNLV, which, you know, you don't see that out of a sophomore guard very often. Like, you don't even see, Jerron Cumberland going to the rim and just slamming it down in somebody's face at will. And, you know, he's got good handles around the basket. He has very good two-point shooting. I think he's, shooting something 60% from two? I'd have to look it up. It's pretty good. And, you know, he's averaging over 10 points per game. If you're out of anyone to really replace the production Jacob Evans was giving you last year, I mean, if you're getting 10 points out of that guy as a sophomore, I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah, definitely, because you needed somebody in that lineup to be the second banana with Cumberland, and I think he's done a really good job offensively and defensively to fill that role. And on two-pointers, he's shooting 52.7%, which is pretty solid. I don't have his numbers around the rim, on the tips of my fingers. But his free throw shooting 62% at the line, 33% from three. Obviously, he needs to drag those up a little bit. The rest of his game has really stood out. He's responded well to stepping into the starting lineup.
Yeah, he's 62% for at the rim, just for just for that stat. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Because the biggest issue for this team is still a scoring off the bench.
Yeah,
and it's been really up and down because it's all what Kane Broome does, and Kane Broome has just been, he's been an adventure this year, for sure. You talked about Trey Scott being up and down. It's Broome has been either hot, he was against UNLV, 14 points on 7-12 shooting. But then he had 4 turnovers in that game. And then 4 points on 1-8 shooting against NKU. He's been really a mystery. And his shooting from 3 is 5-22. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about bench scoring, it begins and ends with Kane Broome, because you're not getting what you're getting with Kane Broome. You're getting even less from Sosa-me. You're not getting anything from Trey Moore. You're not getting anything from Rashad Fredericks as he's still adjusting to the D1 level. Logan Johnson gives you a lot of dynamic pop from the point guard position, but he still hasn't really developed into that, you know, go-to scorer at the point guard. He's more of a facilitator at this point, and he's a true freshman. So, yeah, really the bench goes as Kane Broome goes, and that is kind of a concern going into Saturday, because if Jerron Cumberland isn't getting his points, if Justin Jennifer, regresses back to the kind of role player, court general kind of position, and you're not getting anything out of Kane Broome, you're going to struggle to score in general against a Xavier team that could easily put up a 70 or 80 spot on you.
Yeah, and the thing about Johnson and Trevor Moore is they don't really play enough to really give you that huge boost off the bench. They both play a segment and a half. But we've seen it from numerous Xavier players, it seems, recently in the shootout. It's some random guy off the bench could come in and score 10 points. That's a huge swing for the game.
To that question, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to ask a stupid question, so actually continue with your in-depth analysis that actually matters.
I forgot the rest of my point, so you
can
ask your question.
I'm sorry. Who's that guy going to be? It doesn't have to be a bench player. It doesn't have to be a starter. I mean, it could be a starter. Do you have a guy on Xavier that's just going to go off in this game? Because there's going to be one. There's always one in this game. And who do you think it's going to be?
That is an interesting question. Because I think one of their most intriguing players is Tyreek Jones. But then, he got injured at the end of the Ohio game. And so, if he can't play because he had what looked like a head injury, so if he can't play, that throws their team into a bit of turmoil, I would say. But they have Gooden, and I kind of like Gooden, so I would say him. He would be the Xavier player to watch.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell who. I mean, they have 5 guys that are averaging almost double-digit points per game. So you can kind of pick your poison there. I'm going to go with Najee Marshall. He shoots the second most threes on the team, so he's going to shoot a lot of threes on Saturday. He's shooting 36 per game, but he's only hitting like a quarter of them. So I'm thinking he's probably going to go 5 of 6 from 3. And it's going to be super annoying. I'm going to hate it. And he's going to end up getting a 20 spot. So that's my guy. I'm going to pick Najee Marshall.
A solid pick. I guess it is good that they just played Ohio. Then Paul Scruggs just randomly went off for 21 points. Because he would be the type of guy to when did that guy go crazy? Kyle Kasten, he just seems like he isn't that amazing. So he'll hit 6 threes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could see like if someone like Ryan Welledge, I mean, he's shooting 53s this year, but he's making 40% of them. I mean, but that's like all he does. Like, so if you're Mick Cronin and you're saying like, okay, if Ryan Welledge is in this game, I'm going to lock Justin Jennifer on him, or I'm going to lock Keith Williams on him and make sure he does not get a free open look from three. But if you're looking at like Najee Marshall and you're looking at the analytics and you're saying, oh, this guy only shoots 25% from three, I can probably be okay with letting this guy go open. But then as soon as he does that, he's going to shoot 5 or 6 from three, or 7 or 8 from three, and kill you. Like it happens every year in this game, and it's going to happen with somebody. And it's not a matter of if it's going to happen, it's a matter of when, and really if UC can actually overcome that.
Of course, because like one thing we know just from the history of the shootout is some random Xavier player is just going to go bananas.
Yeah. So what do you think about this game? What are the keys in this game for you?
Well, it seems like the biggest thing the past couple of seasons has been the beginning.
Yes.
Like obviously an easy thing to say is like play well at the beginning of the game. But like last year, Cincinnati just completely blown out in the first 10 minutes of each half. Like not even close. Xavier like beat their ass. A couple years ago, Xavier gets off to a big lead with like the Blue game where he scores like 40 points. But UC was able to play a solid second half and win that game. So I think it's the start. Like if you can keep it tight, play off the home crowd, I think you can like end up pulling away from Xavier.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's the biggest thing is how they start, because if we've seen with this team over, not even just like in the shootout, whenever they get behind in any big game, Ohio State this year, let's not talk about the Nevada game, but in most big games that they've come into, if they have a slow start, they usually play a lot better after halftime, after Mick has had a good 10 minutes to rip into them. But the problem is that in these crosstown shootouts, they get so far behind in the first half, they just do not have the firepower to come back, especially when you're playing a team like Xavier that is very good offensively and, you know, can go punch for punch for you with you. Like you're not going to score 3 buckets for every one of Xavier's. Like Xavier's going to go at least 2 for your every 3. If you happen to even make 3, you know. So it is the start. Like if you're right, if they're down, they can't be down double digits by like the second media segment, you know. They have to keep it tight or they have to be ahead. And if they're ahead or within a couple of points at halftime, UC should be able to win this game.
Yeah, and like one of the other things to watch is like Xavier's defense has given up a ton of threes this season. Like, the opponent's shooting nearly 40%. Like, that hasn't been Cincinnati's real strong suit this season. But if, like, you can get some of those open looks, knock them down. Like, that's really what's been Xavier's problem in, like, the 3 games they've lost. Like, to Wisconsin, Auburn, and San Diego State. Like, Wisconsin went nuts from 3. Auburn hit 11 threes, and San Diego State shot it pretty well from deep. Like then, like on the flip side, Xavier's, as you mentioned earlier, not really a great 3-point shooting team. So if you can like steal points that way, and like keep your advantage at the free throw line that UC's seem to have pretty much all season, like I think that's how you like you just have to steal out those points when you grind out possessions. It's like you can't imagine like this game is going to be up and down, flying up the court. So you really have to take advantage of your opportunities.
Yeah, and they've got to be better. They've got to be really good on the defensive glass. Like Xavier is 47th in the country in getting offensive rebound percentage. Like if they're missing, if they rarely miss, which they don't very often, but if they miss, they have the bigs down there to collect the ball and get a second opportunity. And that's like if you're facing a team like Xavier that has the firepower, that has the offense, that has the free flow, the last thing you want to do is reward them for missing shots and giving them second opportunities. So, I mean, that's another big key for me is just is the bigs. And it comes back to kind of what we circle back to with it in the start of this segment was, you know, Trey Scott and Nysir Brooks have to be good. They have to – they don't need to get, like, a double-double. They just – they have to collect defensive rebounds.
It definitely – because, like, one of the overall, like, larger keys is defensive rebounding. Because, like, Xavier doesn't do it extremely well either.
Right.
And Cincinnati, like, it seems like they're – part of their offense forever has been offensive rebounds. Like, whoever controls the glass, it's going to have a huge advantage in this game.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, because, like, both of the team's, like, flaws, I guess you would point to Cincinnati's offense and Xavier's defense. Like, they tie hand in hand. And if, like, one of those just really struggles, like, then you're, like, really, like, a good stuck. Obviously, because if you dominate on one end, that's how you win games.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And especially if you're looking, if you're a UC team that, I mean, you kind of have, you have to be a good rebounding team, you know, both ways. You have to give yourself second possessions and you have to take them away from the other team. And that's basically been the bread and butter of this UC team for the entire Mick Cronin era is being strong on the glass and preventing those extra opportunities from the other team. And, I mean, the other big part is turnovers. Like this team creates a lot of offense off of turnovers. And Xavier's not a – I mean, they turn the ball over fairly frequently. I mean, you know, 17.8% per possession. Like, that's – I mean, that's a top one – I mean, ranks in the top 150s. I mean, for an offense that is fairly efficient, I mean, that's a pretty high number. So, I mean, yeah, it's like, for me, it's like, if I'm going to list three, is either getting out to a solid lead in the first 2 to 3 segments, not getting into a big hole in those first 2 to 3 segments, getting on the defensive glass, and forcing turnovers.
Yeah, I would put forcing turnovers number two after rebounding. Because, as you mentioned, Xavier really loose with the ball. They don't have, like, a real great point guard. And Cincinnati, like, steal percentage, 32nd in the nation. They 15th in turnover percentage. That's really how they get out and, like, get their offense going, is off these turnovers. Because Xavier shoots the ball, like, way too well. It's like, that you have to give them empty possessions. But one way or another. And it's better if they just don't shoot the ball, period.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, not to kind of put it like, I mean, to kind of, go ahead.
And my third key would be getting somebody else going besides Cumberland.
Mm.
Because obviously you need Cumberland to get going. If, like, you can get Broom or, like, Trey Scott going, Keith Williams, like, has, like, 15 points, steps it up a little bit. Like, that's how you're going to win this game.
So, okay, so question. So, balance or just basically getting another guy to complement Cumberland? Like, would you like something where, like, the guys who are getting most of the minutes get between 8 to 12 points? Or do you want someone to get, you know, 15-plus with Cumberland?
I'm going to say I want somebody to get 15-plus along with Cumberland.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
Just for, like, this reasoning, is I don't really think, but outside of Broom, you're going to be able to rely on anyone on your bench really scoring anything significant. It's like that really puts the onus on the starters to get it done. So you're going to have, like, somebody like Jennifer hit, like, 4 or 5 threes maybe. Like, you're going to have Trey Scott, like, have a solid game again. Because, like, we kind of know what we're going to get from some of these guys offensively. But if, like, somebody like Jennifer can just, like, pop off and get some open looks and knock them down. Like, that's just the type of thing that switches this game around completely. And, like, Jennifer would be, like, one of the like unsung heroes of the series if he had a monster game. It would be like, oh, that guy who like never shoots is having a crazy game. Like he's my candidate now for guy who could have a weird game. Like D Brown had that, or D Davis, not D Brown. Like how D Davis hit like 6 threes that one game. I think Jennifer is like that type of nominee.
Yeah, because I mean, if you're like, I guess if you are Travis Steele, you're obviously going to key in on Cumberland from the outside. You're probably going to key in on Broom. You might lax on Jennifer, who hit a few pretty good threes against NKU and UNLV, but it's been pretty quiet in general this season. So yeah, I mean that seems like a pretty good pick. I think overall, like, if I'm going to pick a winner, I have to pick UC. I mean, not to throw out this stat, but the Cincinnati managers just beat the Xavier managers 85-59, which I don't know if there's any correlation there, but good number to throw out there. And, I mean, I think UC wins this one, like, 70-62, something like that. They're like, an 81% favorite in this game, which I think is way high, but I think they still win this game.
Yeah, of course, I'm never going to pick Xavier to beat Cincinnati. No. I think Cincinnati wins, I'll say, 66-59. Yeah. 7-point win. The KenPom projection is 70-64. So I think it'll be like around there, maybe a little more. Like the one thing that does like make me wonder about this game is like something you kind of mentioned earlier. And like, that's what Cincinnati does if the game is close, because we just haven't seen that happen too often this season, just Ohio State and then against UNLV, some against Milwaukee as well. Like against UNLV, they kind of tried to gag that game away by not hitting free throws and not really performing that great down the stretch. And the one thing about Xavier, like, despite their record, only 6-3, but they've played some really good teams. And, like, they're not going to falter. So, like, that'd be, like, my thing to like, I guess if Xavier is going to win, that'd be my thing to watch. Is, like, what do you do that last 10 minutes if the game is close?
Yeah.
Because you know, like, Xavier's been through it, even though they haven't pulled out some of these games.
Yeah, if it's close, if it's within a possession in the last segment, I would hate to say that UC's gonna lose that, but I think the advantage is definitely in Xavier's favor for sure.
But like the thing UC does have going for them is like it is at home, and like we know it's gonna be crazy. The second real game in the new Fifth Third Arena.
Right. So it should be a good one. I think, I mean, like, this is the thing. Like, neither of us would ever pick Xavier to win this game. I mean, just, like, what was Mick's first year? Something like 2006 or something, 2007, something like that. Like I would pick UC to win this game every single year since then. It doesn't matter who UC's playing. They could be playing Connor Barwin. He could be coming back and play power forward for them tomorrow, and I would still pick UC in this game. But I'm still confident in UC winning this game, just by the way that both teams have played this year. It's at home. They're favored by a lot of metrics, and Xavier has a lot of flaws, and I mean UC has their flaws too. But things go their way. They don't allow a random Xavier player go off for 9 threes. They should be able to win this game.
Yeah, definitely. This should be a game that you win, but also it's a rivalry game. Like you mentioned, we've seen good Cincinnati teams lose to Xavier, and we've seen good Xavier teams lose to Cincinnati teams that weren't as great. Like, that's just part of like the rivalry. And it's part of, like, the insanity of, like, these games. Like, it's really the biggest home game in the entire season. Like, for both teams. And really the start of a really crucial three-game stretch, which you have two of them at home, the Xavier and UCLA.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we kind of just looking back before they went out to Vegas, I kind of figured, you know, you look at this five-game stretch, UNLV, NKU, Xavier, Mississippi State, UCLA. It's really, this is your last opportunity to make some statements in the non-conference schedule. The AAC is down this year. The middle class is stronger in the AAC, kind of that 1-200, you know, KenPom range. So if you can pad your stats with that down the road, but this conference is not going to get more than three NCAA tournament teams, probably. Like, three is probably going to be your best opportunity. If UC can, you know, beat Xavier tomorrow and win one of two at least against Mississippi State and UCLA, they should be sitting pretty in terms of their resume. And even bigger than that, it shows that this team has the capability of winning the American this year, which, you know, you just get in just by winning the conference. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter what your resume is, as long as you just win the conference. So, you know, pretty important three-game stretch.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, it's really more for seeding, really, like what you do here. It's like after the Ohio State game. Like, even though Ohio State's been, like, really good this season, like nobody's really talked about this Bearcats team. Like, not even getting any votes in the top 25. Like, who cares about the top 25? But, like, not even getting votes. Like, people are really sleeping on them. And, like, this is the time they're going to turn on the TVs and give this Bearcats team a watch. And, like, this is really the showcase game. Like, it's the game where, like, you're going to have the most eyeballs on you. And if, like, you win, it's, like, a big win. If you lose, like, it's not, like, a terrible loss. But it's, like, something that people will remember.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, to your point, it's not going to make or break your season if you win or lose on Saturday. But it's, you know, a win gets the eyes on your back on your program, because I don't think a lot of people are really paying attention to UC this year, kind of like to your point. But if you go out there and beat, you know, Xavier at home, you know, it's gonna put the positive attention on you. I mean, you're gonna get into a lot of brackets early, and I mean the bracketology at this point of the year doesn't make a lick of shit, but it's important to get those resume, those good games on your resume early.
Yeah, especially since, like, as you mentioned, like, your league isn't looking that amazing on paper. So you have to get them somewhere. And, like, this is one of the big ones. It's Xavier, for Christ's sake. Like, you can't lose to Xavier. Let's take a look at the league as a whole real quick. Just before we take off. It was interesting last week, because a lot of these teams started playing some real competition. Houston played Oregon, and Houston beat them. They're 7-0, getting some top 25 votes. UCF went on the road to Missouri and lost in overtime. A really tough loss for them. Like, I don't know, that seemed like one they needed to win. Temple just lost to Villanova by 10. Connecticut lost to Arizona. They're still 7-2. Wichita State's 4-3, but they, like, stomped Baylor. SMU was 6-4. They've already played 10 games somehow. But they just lost to TCU. Now, has anything really stood out to you this year about the conference? Or does it just look like this is going to be maybe two or three bids for this league and that's it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a transition year for the conference. We kind of talked about it. Like last year, I mean, or a couple of weeks ago, with the way UConn is recruiting, with the way Memphis is recruiting, Cincinnati's always been a staple at the top. Houston's always been solid. They just renovated their arena. They should continue to be a conference title contender. UCF's been very good. It's a transition year, and, like, hell, Wichita State, they're like, what, 5-3 or something like that? They were picked 8th in the conference. It's it's a conference with a solid middle class, but no real, like, it's not as top heavy as it was last year. Like, you have five teams, six teams, Cincinnati's, Houston, UCF, Temple, UConn, and Wichita State, that are top 100 teams. There's four that are between 100 and 200, and then South Florida and ECU that are bringing up the rear like they always do, which they're probably going to do that going forward unless they pull a couple of upsets. But it's a conference that I feel like they're going to get a lot of, like, NIT and CBI level teams, but then those teams are going to build momentum and, you know, make a good NCAA tournament run, or make a good run for more NCAA tournament bids next season. Like, I think this conference could very easily have at least 5 to 6 teams in the NCAA tournament in 2019. The 2019-2020 season. What do you think?
I think you're right about that. Just like where UConn and Memphis are. Like, Memphis especially, just not that great this year. UConn has, like, a nice record. Like, they have a big one against Syracuse, but, like, they, like, whiffed on their other two chances for nice wins. Although, they do play Florida State this week. Another, like, interesting weekend for the league. Houston plays at Oklahoma State. UConn plays Florida State. Wichita State plays Oklahoma. Like, Wichita is, like, only 4-3. But if they beat Oklahoma after beating Baylor, like, maybe that starts to turn their season around. And they have, like, some kind of, like, buzz to be something. Because just, like, right now, like, they're not an at-large team. Like, Tulsa plays Kansas State. Tulsa's 6-3. They just beat Oklahoma State. But it's really going to come down to, like, if any of these teams can pull off any marquee non-conference wins, then really not trip over their feet in conference play. Because this is the type of league where, like, some of these teams, like, may not, like, be impressive on paper, but they're still solid teams. Like, going to Wichita is going to be tough for anybody. And, like, same like going to SMU. Just, like, you know what you're going to get there.
Right.
And, like, none of these teams, like, on the other end, Rick, really, like, that impressive.
Yeah, and it's, like, I could, if you're making the field today, you're going to have UC, Houston, and UCF in the tournament as probably, like, you know, 7 to 10 seeds. And then there's just, like, a bunch of teams. Like, Temple, UConn, Wichita State, and SMU are probably kind of in the NIT field. And then Memphis, Tulsa, and Tulane are kind of in the CBI field. Like, it's a lot of balance. I mean, I guess in terms of, like, segmentation. Like, you got a good couple, few teams at the top, a good few teams in that middle, in that second quartile, then a few teams in that third quartile, and then South Florida and EC with the bottom. Like, it's not gonna look like this every season. It's just one of those weird transition seasons. And I think the conference is making the right strides going forward. It's just they've got to, you know, SMU's got to rebuild their depth after Mike Brown, or whoever his name is, killed the program. UConn and Memphis have to get those solid recruits into the program and, you know, continue to rebuild. I don't know what the hell South Florida and ECU is doing. I don't really care about them. But this is a conference that's, if all things go right, is going to have, like, 6 or 7 teams in the NCAA tournament most years.
Let's not go crazy. 7 teams.
Okay, five to six. All right. I'll take that back. I'll say 5 to 6 with it that are in the NCAA tournament talk come March. Like, you know, first 4 in, first 4 out at least. Like, top 72.
Okay, that seems more realistic. Larry Brown, like, what's that?
Larry Brown, there it is. I don't know. There's a lot of Browns out there. It's a very common name.
Looking at bracketology, since it's going to be perfect, and we already know it's going to happen now. Like you mentioned, like he does have 3 teams in, 9 seed Houston, 9 seed UCF, 11 seed Cincinnati. Like, so that's where you are perception wise. And if, like, the league keeps going at this rate, where, like, nobody, like, that's where why this is so important for the Bearcats, because if you pull off these next 3 games, which all winnable and, like, all losable at the same time, like you're in position to like be wearing your white jerseys come the tournament. But if you stumble, like you're wearing your road jerseys or whatever tournament jerseys they have, and you're just going to be at the seat of the committee, like hoping you don't get screwed that terribly.
Yeah, and I think that's why, like, for me, it'll say a lot more about the team if they win two of the next three games, because you not only get two good non-conference pelts to hang on the wall, but it also shows that you're not going to fall to the middle of the pack and are fighting for like that 11 seed, you know, in the American. You can probably win like, I mean, they play what, 14 games? They play 16 conference games, something like that, right?
18.
So they win, like, you can probably win like 15 to 16 of those conference games and probably be in a pretty good spot for like a 5 or 6 seed. You know, you're not gonna lose half of your AAC games.
Definitely not. If they go 16-2 in the league, they'll probably definitely be like an at-large team.
Right.
And we've seen like teams roll through the league, like Cincinnati did the last 2 years. They've got 16-2 like both years in league play. And 1 year it won them the league title, and the second year they finished second when SMU went 17-1. So I think you can aim high. And like this, it's a really interesting game like coming up. Just because not only because it's Xavier, because like now we really get into what the season's all about, and we stop playing these teams that are like shrug emojis almost.
It's the cupcake emoji, yeah. Yeah.
Even like in like UNLV sense, it's like they're okay, I guess. And they, boy, did they really hate Mick Cronin and that crowd.
That was funny. Yeah, he could have been a good hire for that program. No bias at all, but.
Wait, do you have any other thoughts on the league or the shootout before we wrap this one up?
No, I'm good. I still pick UC to win this like 70-62. It's gonna be hard. It's gonna be tough. It's gonna be hard. All of these Carson shootout games are gonna be just terrible on both fan bases. But I think UC eventually wins this one. You know, not like comfortably. I wouldn't say it's like Arkansas Pine Bluff comfortable, but a 7-point win in this game is comfortable by Carson shootout standards. I don't know. What are your final thoughts?
Especially from UC's end, like winning by like
winning
by like 7 or 8 would just be fine. Like I'm just really excited for this one because like obviously it's like one of the biggest games of the year. And I don't know, I just like I really like where this team is headed, even though like they haven't really been battle tested. Like this is really where we find out like how they've progressed since Ohio State, which is one of the biggest questions, the biggest question about this team, is like how have they grown and matured since then?
Yeah,
it's looking like they've been trending pretty well because they haven't played like outside of UNL like one close game since then. And so it's really going to be fun, and I'm really excited to see who steps up and how they perform against the dreaded Xavier Musketeers.
Yeah, it's kind of like to your point, not to kind of belabor it, but it's almost like a nice opportunity to wash the bad taste of Ohio State out of your mouth. You know, because they had a big opportunity against Ohio State, you know, just in terms of like name in the local area. Like Ohio State carried a big weight in the state of Ohio and Cincinnati. Like you do the same thing to Xavier and it gets all the good feels back in the program. Like it was nice to beat NKU pretty comfortably. It's nice that they're 8-1, 9-1, something like that. But I don't know. It gets all the good feelings back.
And then just because of how crazy the game is, on the flip side of the whole thing, it's like you lose to Xavier, then it's it's like a bunch of questions.
Yeah.
And like, oh, they haven't played anybody since Ohio State, then they lost to Xavier. So, yeah, it's like, one way or another, we're going to have something to talk about coming out of this game.
Exactly.
And hopefully it's positive, because it's Xavier. Nobody wants Xavier to win anything.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it should be a good one. I'm pretty confident that they'll win this game. But, you know, then again, it's the shootout, and you just never know.